Roll call.
Roll call for Friday, February 14th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geist.
Here.
Hastert.
Yes.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
I want you to
here.
Get to the bottom. Okay.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Ross.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Reverend Veit.
It's been an honor to serve you all this week. Thank you. And thinking about yesterday with our armed forces, I'd like to offer a prayer for our armed forces, but it's also very appropriate for members of the Senate as well, I think. So let us pray. Almighty God, we commend to your gracious care in keeping all the men and women of our armed forces at home and abroad. Defend them day by day with your heavenly grace. Strengthen them in their trials and temptations. Give them courage to face the perils which beset them, and grant them a sense of your abiding presence wherever they may be. We pray this for them and for us here today. It is in your holy name that we do pray. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reverend Veit, on behalf of the Senate, we thank you for taking time to share the gospel with us. You bet. Senator Hastert?
No, sir. I'm sorry. No.
Okay. The reading, correction, and approval of the journal, the reading clerk will read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the Journal of February the 13th, 2014, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the report. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. The doctor of the day, I hope I get this right, is Sigsby Duck. Welcome to the Senate, Doctor. Dr. Duck hails from Rock Springs, so welcome. Hope the roads were good to come over. The nurse of the day is Cynthia Labonte from Cheyenne. Today in Wyoming history, 1911, an act of the Wyoming legislature approved the creation of Niobrara County. Thought for the day, always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much. Oscar Wilde. That's difficult for the majority floor leader. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, in accordance with Senate Rule 4-7, barring objection, I would like to re-refer Senate File 35, Wearable Computers, Prohibition While Driving, sponsored by Senator Esquibel, to Committee 6, Arts, Parks, so on and so forth.
Without objection, it's referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, and whatever else it needs.
The Arts, Parks,
Messages from the House.
February the 13th, 2014, from the House of Representatives. Message number 100. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 2, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement, I 16, noes 0. Mr. President, a bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 4, Pest Control Compact, I 60, noes 0. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 13th, 2014, from the House of Representatives, message number 102, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 6, Domestic Assault and Battery, ayes 56, noes 1. House Bill Number 9, Bodily Injury and Serious Bodily Injury, ayes 51, noes 9. And House Bill Number 10, Water Well Permits, ayes 59, noes 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Mr. President, in the balcony on the right here, we have some members of the Wyoming Advisory Panel for Students with Disabilities who advocate to meet the unmet needs of students with disabilities by advocating and commenting on the improvement of educational opportunities, along with Shannon Buller, who is the Executive Director of the Wyoming Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities. I'd appreciate it if the Senate would provide them with a warm welcome.
Welcome to the Senate. Members of the Senate, you should have on your desk a list of bills for possible introduction today. Senate File 99 is the second bill. That will be moved to the bottom of the order. Senate File 32, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 32, sponsored by Senator Landon, Education, Professional Development, and Training, and Act Relating to Public Schools.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Senate File 32 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. It's my understanding, fellow senators, that you've heard about this bill. It's something that I've actually thought about for a couple of years, Mr. President, and one of the questions might be, well, why are we bringing it during a budget session? And I would simply say that this is a program, this education, professional development training was put in place in 2005, and it's a substantial commitment that we make to the school foundation program for those 10 non-pupil days that we provide to our districts for the training and continuing education of our teachers. Let me say up front with regard to this bill, fellow senators, this is not a bill to in any way diminish what I think is a very, very important thing that we do for our teachers. This is not about the teachers. This is a policy discussion that I'm suggesting to all of you that we have after 10 years of this program being in place. Let's visit about how we're doing with these 10 days. And what prompted this, Mr. President, this is a small business and a parent bill up in my part of the world. I have many, many parents coming to me and several businesses come to me and say, is there any way that we can get control of the length of these school years? Well, what was going on was about every 3 or 4 weeks up in my part of the world, the district was holding a one-day in-service teacher training day. And it put a lot of pressure on our parents, particularly those who are students at the college. And obviously, shortening the summer was of great concern to our small business. As I mentioned, Mr. President, this is a program in which we fund 10 days with our block grant, and it is estimated that we spend $29 million to the Education Resource Block Grant funding model, 2.1% of the entire amount that we send to our districts to fund this program. There's another $20.6 million for instructional facilitators and another $10.6 million for professional development funding. So we're talking about a substantial commitment that we make as a Senate. I think I would appreciate your favorable vote so we can get this to the important policy discussion with regard to what we expect out of these teacher training days. Thank you.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Christensen, no to aye. Closing. Vote closed. 22 ayes, 8 noes.
Senate File 32, having received a two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 32 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 105, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 105, sponsored by Senator Kraft, Hospital Licensing's Moratorium, and Act Relating to Hospital Licensing.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I move introduction of Senate File 105 and would ask for your favorable consideration. Senate File 105 comes to you as a result of a former bill that was heard originally in the Labor Health Committee, and that bill failed by one vote in the Labor Health Committee. I believe the concerns that were addressed in the committee have been answered by this particular bill. The bill simply places a one-year moratorium on the issuance of new hospital licenses. It's 1 year for the period of April 1st, 2014 through March 31st, 2015. Now, concerns were raised in the interim committee that we might be impeding the progress of hospitals who've already broken ground for construction. And we are aware of one hospital in the state who's in that situation. So these new dates were very carefully crafted so that they wouldn't affect any ongoing construction, nothing that is already moving forward and proceeding. They provide a very narrow window for the Department of Health to conduct just a study addressing the issue of cost shifting, which results from uncompensated care in our hospitals, using existing data that's readily available to the Department of Health. Now, uncompensated care is an issue Wyoming hospitals have been struggling with. In the last 5 years, they've reported they've lost $908 million in uncompensated services incurred by the hospital's legal mandate to care for all patients regardless of their ability to pay. Now, the importance of proceeding cautiously at this point and the importance for this moratorium at this point is due not only to the challenges of addressing really significant hospital reimbursement costs that have already been authorized by Congress, but also to the uncertainty of the Affordable Care Act. At this point, we're not even certain that a private for-profit hospital has the ability to accept Medicare, Medicaid, or TRICARE patients. I really hope you will allow this bill to be introduced and discussed, as we have requested an AG's opinion on this very issue, and we're assured we'll have that opinion available to us next week. You may have heard the argument that by requesting this brief moratorium to more fully study this issue, we're inhibiting free trade. I would submit to you that health care simply does not operate in a truly free marketplace. Hospitals that are not mandated by law to provide services regardless of ability to pay enjoy a competitive advantage because they don't have to provide unprofitable services. They can be selective. I believe it's important to keep Wyoming hospitals profitable and important to care for all of our citizens, regardless of their ability to pay. Now, this is a very complex issue. It involves a lot more issues than I have the ability to address in my brief time period. So I would ask that you please allow this bill to be introduced and to be discussed in the detail a situation of this gravity deserves. Thank you so much. I urge your favorable consideration.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Beepout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich? Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote to close. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
Senate File 105, having failed to receive a two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 105 has failed introduction. Senate File 110, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 110, sponsored by Senator Hines, Water Change of Use, and act relating to water rights.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I move introduction of Senate File 110 and ask for your support to get it in the committee for more discussion. What this address is that the change of place in your water right permit that you have from the state engineer. Right now, you can get a change, but you cannot, if you haven't used 100% of the water in the past, then that you lose that portion. And what this would do would be allow you to, you have to petition, and if doing that, if they approve of the transfer, the water would come from the same diversion spot and would could be used then on different lands, and you would have the full entitlement that you would have on your original water right. It also states that there can be no injury to any other existing water appropriator. I would like to get this into committee and have these water experts discuss it. So I support your, I ask you for your support. Thank you, Mr. President.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Beepout? Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Beepout.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 110, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 111, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File Number 111, sponsored by Senator Emmerich, Firearm Background Checks, Mental Health Records, and Act Relating to Public Safety.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Senate File 111 and ask for your consideration. The initial impetus for this bill came from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. They indicated there was very little data forwarded to the National Instant Background Check System, referred to as NICS. Firearm retailers rely on the NICS background checks when conducting all the necessary paperwork for transfer of firearms to law-abiding citizens. However, a background check is only as good as the records within the database. NICS databases are incomplete because many states have not provided all the records that establish someone is prohibited from owning a firearm under current law. The firearm industry is launching a campaign to encourage states to report all records that establish someone is prohibited from owning a firearm under current law. This bill will assure that Wyoming submits the names of those people who are prohibited from owning firearms to that NICS database. Wyoming can improve the NICS database by submitting all records establishing an individual is prohibited from owning firearms, such as mental health records showing that someone is an adjudicated mental defective, and I want to stress that part, adjudicated, or involuntarily committed to a mental institute, as well as records showing someone is a subject of domestic violence, drug addict, or other prohibited category. After the hue and cry of Columbine, Sandy Hook, and other shootings, where the statement is made, if only we could keep mentally ill persons from owning firearms. This bill may help in conforming to federal law without new regulations. This bill will help ensure or help to prevent people who should not own firearms in Wyoming from purchasing them and improve the safety of our citizens. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Beepout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
Senate File 111, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 120, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 120, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Correctional Health Care Cost, and Act Relating to Medical Assistance and Services.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, I wish to withdraw that bill.
At the request of the sponsor, House Bill 120, or Senate File 120, has been withdrawn.
They said they could do it without legislation.
Senate File 112, First reading of Senate file.
Senate file 112, sponsored by Senator Johnson. Penalties for misclassification of employees and act relating to workers' compensation and employment.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move introduction of Senate File 112. Unfortunately, there is a lot of tax fraud in the construction industry, and it's intentional. As a result, those contractors lower their labor costs by evading payments on state and federal employment taxes, unemployment insurance, and workers' compensation premiums. This bill describes an act that is arguably already a violation of Wyoming law, the intentional failure to properly classify an individual as an employee. In the construction industry, for instance, it's common for irresponsible employers to pay workers off the books or intentionally misclassify them as independent contractors. Of the two, paying the workers off the books occurs more often. To date, the Wyoming Department of Labor has not been able to counter the illegal practice due to a policy of collecting delinquent unemployment contributions without leveling penalties. This is why the additional language is needed, because the department's practice can be raised as a defense. In addition, when and if there is a federal enforcement, they collect unpaid federal taxes, wages, or overtime pay. They do not collect unpaid Wyoming unemployment contributions or workers' compensation. This bill will not penalize businesses for simple mistakes. The violation must be intentionally done. Only a repeated violation would result in a felony charge. Simple errors will not even be a misdemeanor. Our concern was with the honest employers, and their employees are struggling to compete and protect their middle-class livelihoods. They deserve our protection, and it is much overdue. Thank you.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Emmerich.
No.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert. Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern.
No.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Landon, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. 16 ayes, 14 noes.
Senate File 112, having failed to receive a two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 112 has failed introduction. Senate File 119, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 119, sponsored by Senator Barnard, Education Mandatory Kindergarten, and Act Relating to Kindergarten.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate File 119 and ask for your favorable consideration. I did this bill about 2 years ago. It lost by one vote. I didn't intend to run that this year, because when I left for the Senate, I told my wife that I was going to run for office again. She said if I did, she was going to shoot me. If I run the kindergarten bill, what will you do? And she said, I'll just shoot you in the kneecap. So, gentlemen, this is a really simple bill. If the children in the state don't go to kindergarten, and they come into the school system program at 6 years of age and want to be in the first grade, they are a year behind in school. Kindergarten is the new first grade. All over the state, children that graduate from kindergarten are reading first grade books when they leave. This is a real problem. I was been asked by two superintendents and a lobbyist to bring this bill back, and that's why I am doing it. Wyoming has the next to the lowest years as far as years in schools of the states in the country. We have 9 years. Some schools have as much as 12 years of school. I hope that you'll recognize the problem that this causes and make efforts to support this bill, and I thank you very much.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert? Hicks,
aye.
Hines, Johnson,
no.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer, Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross,
no.
Closing vote, closing. Vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
Senate File 119, having failed to receive a two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 119 has failed introduction, and we've saved Senator Barnard's kneecaps. Senate File 116, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 116, sponsored by Senator Burns, expungement of felonies and act relating to criminal procedures.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move Senate File 116 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, back in 2011, the legislature passed the first expungement of nonviolent felonies bill, and it's actually worked out quite well. I'd like to go over a quick list. If you're a convicted felon for the rest of your life, you cannot vote, you cannot bear arms, you cannot serve on a jury, hold public office, you're disqualified from certain employment positions, and you have a harder time obtaining a job. What that bill did has restored rights to a number of people in the state of Wyoming. What I did was but I also found out from a number of people that there are a number of laws that did not qualify under that bill. And so what this bill does is expand and add a number of laws that would be eligible for expungement. They go through the same procedure. You have to wait 10 years till after your punishment is done. Then you apply to the court for expungement. The district attorney is notified in the court of origin. Anybody who might have been a victim is notified. If there is any sort of money owed, restitution has to be made and so forth. The additional laws that this bill adds are possession and of explosives, promoting prostitution, interference with a police officer, that's not assaulting a police officer, just interfering with him, perjury, possession of a deadly weapon, fourth offense, DUI, and then all the drug laws, or not all of the drug laws, but most of the drug laws, and that's the real target here. Is you have somebody who was arrested back when they were 18 years old for something. Now they're 38 or 40. They haven't had anything to do with this, yet they're still a convicted felon.
Mr. Chairman, if anybody, I would ask that the body to pass this thing, and if anybody has any particular problem with any one of the particular bills, any of the particular laws that might be expungible, I've got the citations here, and we can discuss the idea of amending those out. I'm trying to make this as fungible as possible and flexible as possible if there's a particular concern on any of these laws. And with that, Mr. President, I ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer, Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
Senate File 116, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 115, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 115, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, warrantless searches and repeal, and act relating to game and fish.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that for adoption of Senate File 116, ask for its favorable consideration. Warrantless searches repeal. This bill does something that we all like to do. It actually just takes a piece out of the books. Presently, Game and Fish has way broader authority than any other agency as far as warrantless searches. They can pull cars over, walk into your camp, come in anywhere you want, no warrant, ask you to empty out your packs on a pack horse, do anything they want to do. Normal law enforcement, if they're in search of a murderer or a murder weapon, they've got to go get a warrant to go look in that same pack. These guys have broad, broad authority to go way beyond, and we're starting to see that get used a bunch. And what this simply does is takes a piece out of the statute, and it says, any person authorized to enforce the provision of this act may search without warrant any camp, pack outfit, pack animal, motor vehicle, boat, wagon, or trailer for any wildlife probable cause to believe is taken or is professed unlawfully. All this does is if they've got probable cause, which that part of it says, that they go to a judge and actually get a search warrant to legally search it and do it. And anywhere else through our laws, for them to go do a search, they need to go get a search warrant and get a judge to prove what it is. And the statute got tipped over in Minnesota, and the argument on it was really interesting. It said, state cannot argue with logic or reason that conservation officers have more leeway to enter, detain, search, and seize in pursuit of a citizen who may have an extra walleye, duck, pheasant, or extra fishing line than a law enforcement in pursuit of a citizen alleged to have committed armed robbery or murder. And that's, in a nutshell, that's really what it is let's put a ball on the same level. It does one other thing, is all of our game wardens are all post-certified. They all go through law enforcement in Douglas. They have to actually teach all of these guys dual sets of laws. That includes the normal sheriff's office people, the highway patrol, and the game wardens all operate under two different sets of statutes as far as what they can do. This will make it where all our law enforcement statewide operates under the exact same rules and regulations and statutes. It literally brings rights back to all of our citizens while still allowing them to do their business by getting a warrant. I urge for its favorable consideration.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns? Case? Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern.
No.
President Ross.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Senate File 115, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 118, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 118, sponsored by Senator Rothfuss, Medicaid Staged Expansion, and Act Relating to Medicaid.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for the introduction of Senate File 118, Medicaid Staged Expansion, and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of years looking at and considering Medicaid expansion. There are a lot of options out there. We know that there's costs, there's benefits. We know that there's 17,600 folks right now in Wyoming that don't have access to affordable health care coverage, and we all know that we need to do something about that. But as to coming to a conclusion or a decision on exactly what we should do, we've had trouble with that. We've certainly struggled as a legislature, and I bring this piece of legislation in an attempt to provide some conversation and to provide a solution that brings all of the options to the table. I drafted this legislation after listening to a lot of the debate and trying to figure out what the best ideas were that had been proposed in other committees, by other legislatures around the country. And this legislation is effectively an attempt at compromise to make sure that we have access to all the possibilities, that we don't line it out, but we just try and move forward in whatever it is that's decided to be in the best interest of the state. Mr. President, very briefly, the concepts of the bill are that it would, for a short period of time, for the first year, it would just do effectively a traditional Medicaid expansion that would allow us to have access to those resources quickly. And in testimony by the folks at the Department of Health, anything other than that direct expansion would take quite a bit of time. So if we want to provide coverage as quickly as possible, we would have to do that expansion. But it has a one-year sunset on it. So that would go away after that 1 year, quickly as possible. And during that one year, we would be directing the Department of Health, the director there, the insurance commissioner, and the governor to negotiate an 1115 waiver with the Center for Medicaid Services, basically to try and figure out what it is that's in the best interest of the state of Wyoming. There's some parameters that are laid out in this legislation, and those parameters are simply based on trying to bring in all the best ideas we've heard. The first priority is to try and have premium assistance as an approach for the higher income levels that would be covered by this. Premium assistance basically means we take the Medicaid dollars and we buy a plan on the insurance exchange, the federal exchange, or we provide premium assistance for employer benefits. So those would both be options under this. We've had a lot of discussion about this concept of Medicaid fit. The Medicaid fit allows co-payments to be implemented through a traditional Medicaid. So there's a cost-sharing program put on, which is something that a lot of folks have been interested in seeing in traditional Medicaid, and this provides an opportunity to look at that. And then perhaps at lower incomes, there's the opportunity to have a full Medicaid expansion take place, depending on what is in the best interest of the state. To receive a waiver, we have to show cost neutrality. This plan requires that. But there's a few other components that we put in. That 1115 waiver that I just discussed, if we did move forward to expansion, has its own independent sunset, Mr. President. That sunset would be 3 years after implementation, and it would require additional legislative action before we would move forward with that plan or anything else. In other words, about 3.5 to 4 years from now, we'd get another look at this, and we would have to take affirmative action to continue the expansion. My hope is that that will assuage some of the concerns about us getting into this and not being able to get back out. We'll have to opt to stay in, Mr. President, and I think that's hopefully a benefit that would allow some people to have a little bit more confidence potential in the future. Obviously, we've got a kick-out provision where if the feds don't live up to their end of the bargain, that 90% federal match or better, the legislation goes away. But one other piece that was thrown into this one to try and ease additional concerns was the idea of a health care reserve account. So the idea here is that this expansion, the optional expansion, will actually lead to a net savings for the state of around $40 million per biennium. That's $40 million cash that we can bank that we wouldn't have available to us if we didn't pass this expansion. So instead of just spending it on other projects, I'm proposing here that we set up an account, we take all of those net savings, we put it into that account, and then if we find ourselves in a situation where some of these unforeseen circumstances we're concerned about actually come to fruition, we'll have $40 million after one biennium or $80 million after that second biennium available to us to bridge that gap to whatever our next proposal or policy or plan is going to be. It's serving as a bit of insurance for ourselves to help make sure that we can implement a policy now but protect us in the future.
Senator?
Am I out of time, Mr. President?
I've given you extra two.
Very nearly so. Thank you, Mr. President. I'll sum up there and say I'm trying to bring forward a compromise solution that we can discuss and debate here on the floor. I hope the body will support the introduction so we have that opportunity. And if we do, there's a lot of truffles over here.
Chief Kirk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Burns, no to aye. Closing. Vote closed. 21 ayes, 9 noes.
Senate File 118, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Senate File 113, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 113, sponsored by Senator Hicks, Task Force on Expansion of Natural Gas Service and Act Relating to Natural Gas.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd move for adoption of Senate File 113. Members of the body, I'm asking for your help. There's approximately 110 towns and unincorporated areas in the state of Wyoming. Roughly 36%, over one in every three towns, doesn't have natural gas service in the state of Wyoming. You might recognize some of these. Let me see if I can find some in your district, because they probably exist. Alban, Alpine, Bear River, Burlington, Chugwater, Claremont, Cokeville, Dayton, Dixon, Dubois, East Thermopolis, Elk Mountain, Encampment, Granger, Guernsey, Hartville, Hewlett, Kirby, LaGrange, Lost Springs, Manville, Marbleton, Midwest, Mills, Mountain View, Opal, Pine Haven, Ranchester, Riverside, Rock River, Rolling Hills, Savory, Star Valley Ranch, Sundance, Superior, Tinsleet, Thane, Mantassel, and Yoder. We're the fourth largest natural gas producer in the United States, and yet a third of our incorporated municipalities in these rural areas don't have natural gas service. I brought a bill last year that would have probably established a grant loan program through SLIB, and what I found out, this is intricately very complicated. You deal with a whole range of issues of ability to pay. Do you use the fifth cent tax? Do you expand the joint power boards that includes natural gas districts? How do you do franchise fees? Do we even want to establish a program that's eligible for these towns? What's the cost? What's their ability to repay? There's more questions than there is answers, and quite frankly, I don't have all those answers. So I'm asking your help to at least look at this and see if there's any potential that the state of Wyoming, let me tell you what the task force is tasked to do, review the legal and logistical issues associated with expanding natural gas service to those underserved areas, develop preliminary estimates on the cost and infrastructure necessary to provide natural gas service to those underserved areas, evaluate the potential for programs that could be implemented through the state or its agencies to expand natural gas service to those areas. That's what it does. I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
Senate File 113, having received 2/3 majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 114, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 114, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons, and Act Relating to Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Senate File 114, Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons, and ask for your favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, Senate File 114 maintains the current definition of mental illness under 2510-101, so that the scope and the cost of Title 25 continues to apply only to people who are a danger to themselves or others due to their mental illness. There are 4 other points related to it. 114 maintains the constitutional right of the detained person to have a judicial hearing within 72 hours to determine whether there is reasonable cause for the detention. This ensures that the detained person's due process rights are not violated. The lack of suitable facilities to hold individuals under Title 25 is one of the greatest problems facing our existing Title 25 system. I know I've been to countless meetings at home on this. Senate File 114 expands those regional detention and treatment options by turning to the state hospital to accept detained persons from certain counties, as well as turning to tax-funded hospitals to accept detained persons from within their communities. 114 specifies the role and duties of the county attorney in 109 and 110 hearings, ensuring that Title 25 proceedings are done uniformly across the state. Senate File 114 finally creates a mandatory one-year aftercare program to help patients who are transitioning back into their communities after having been committed to the state hospital. This will ensure that every patient has a post-discharge plan of care that is coordinated with each community's local mental health provider. This mandatory aftercare is essential for the patient's, 1, continued mental health, good health, 2, the safety of our communities, and 3, lowering the costs of Title, this is the key part. The third part is lowering the cost of Title 25 to the state and to the counties by slowing that revolving door of the Title 25 commitments. Members of the Senate, 114 has the support of your Wyoming County attorneys. They're asking for some help with this. They're working the front line. I'm asking for your help with it now, with your favorable support.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Case I to no. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Senate File 114, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 117, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 117, sponsored by Senator Perkins, Summary Probate Proceedings, an act relating to the Wyoming Probate Code.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for introduction of Senate File 117, Summary of Probate Proceedings. Mr. President, members of the Senate, what this bill attempts to do, if it's introduced, is just take you back. Summary of probate are those proceedings that we've had that where for less than $200,000 you can avoid the time and the delay of a full-blown probate to try and speed things along after a death. What this bill does a couple of things. First of all, it provides some teeth for individuals who refuse to turn over property that you're entitled to get under summary probate proceeding. Sometimes it's a bank and maybe a brokerage house or other things like that. To present with the affidavit that's under law that to turn over that property and they refuse to do that. It provides some teeth to enforce that. Second thing it does, it attempts to do is to allow some procedure to proceed if you can't locate all the beneficiaries that would receive under the summary of probate proceeding. Right now you have to get signatures of everybody. Every once in a while you can't find someone who's estranged, has a mechanism to take any property for that person and put it in unclaimed property to do other things to preserve that, but allows it to proceed, again, instead of having to go through a formal probate process. The third thing it does is under the current law, the law allows for objections when you do summary of probate proceedings for real property. However, there's no procedure to do anything. If someone objects, what does the judge do, or what do you do in that instance? This attempts to provide a procedure, a framework that you can resolve those issues, hopefully. And if not, it can be left. The judge can leave them where they are. But otherwise, it at least allows procedure to examine the objection and determine whether it should be sustained or dismissed, and allow the summary procedure to continue. So ultimately, urge your favorable consideration. Again, what it's attempting to do is to keep this in the summary probate process and not require people, help them to avoid the full-blown probate process, which sometimes can be very expensive, and also it usually takes a significant period of time. Thank you, Mr. President.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case. Christensen, Coe, Cooper, Kraft, Dockstader, Driscoll, Emmerich, Esquivel, Geis, Hastert, Hicks, Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Platern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 117, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 99, first reading of Senate File. Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, if we could, with your permission, would withdraw 99.
Without objection, and at the request of the sponsor, Senate File 99 is withdrawn.
Oh, no.
Members of the Senate, that concludes introduction of bills. Good work. Reports from standing committees.
February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 66, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 39, Grand Teton National Park Transfer of State Lands, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 64, Public Health Nursing, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins. No, Senators Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 71, Reversions of Appropriations, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 103, State Buildings Construction, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 104, Permanent Mineral Trust Fund Protection, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 56, State Engineer Fees, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 76, Unemployment Insurance Workers Misconduct, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 81, Employer Access to Social Media Accounts, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 3, School Facilities Collaborative Committee Process, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Coe, Linden, and Rothfuss. Senator, Co-Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 4, School Finance Local Resources, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss. Senator, Co-Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 5, Teachers National Certification Pay Increase, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, O2, Barnard, Cole, Lannan, and Ralpha, Senator Co-Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 92, WCCC Director Ex Officio Memberships 2, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, O2, Barnard, Cole, Lannan, and Ralpha, Senator Co-Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd like to give the members of the Senate a quick update on your goldenrod. You should all have it. And it won't take long, Mr. President. On the first page, we talked about when we came into this, started this budget session, we had $23 million available for this legislature to spend. That amount now is, as you look on page 1, midway to the right-hand column, $2.2 million. You'll see that with a little parentheses around it. That means we're in the red, $2.2 million, because of the appropriations that have occurred in various bills moving through the legislative process. And, Mr. President, that's on second page under general fund. You'll see appropriations. And you go down starting with the House Bill 46 and through the rest of those. Mr. President, on the School Foundation Program on page 4, if you look down there under appropriations, you'll see two items that have received introductory votes and are moving through the system. House Bill 5, you'll see $5 million for video equipment. You'll see that shown under the 13-14 budget, and that's because it is effective immediately. And we talked about this a couple of days ago, Mr. President, which means that because of that effective immediately date, it has to be reflected in the current budget. And then you'll also see the employee pension plan contributions, which is House Bill 46 of $14.6 million. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Bills on second reading. Senate File 6, first reading or second reading of the Senate file. We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 2. Oh, it was laid back. I'm sorry. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 6.
Second reading. Senate File Number 6, Second Reading Amendment Number 2, Page 1, Line 2.
Mayor Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have moved Second Reading Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 6 and asked for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, what this bill does is it streamlines this thing. The whole purpose of the amendment is to provide for the due process and the fair consideration of appeals from the state engineer. And so that's what this amendment does. And how it works is what we do, the guts of it are that we simply come back, Mr. President, and we have the hearing in front of the state engineer, and then what would happen is that if the state engineer, if you're not satisfied or the ruling is, that would be a final determination, and from that then you would appeal. And the appeal, Mr. President, would be to the OAH instead of the right back to basically the state engineer and other various bodies that he sits on for reconsideration. And then once it goes to the OAH, if either party is unhappy with that, then they can appeal that. It would go to the district court for a district court review. The way that the amendment works is that the main part is if you go to, and what the real meat is this, you go to page 3, you remove the new language on line 6 through 8. Then on lines basically 9 through 21, that goes away, and you have the insert that you see on the amendment which is on line 11 of the amendment, page 3, lines 7 through 21, where you see that it will be conducted under the Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act before an Office of Administrative Hearings. Then the second one is the appeal from if there's appeal from that, it goes to the district court. The second one is go to page 5 and delete the new language. And then lines 3 through 10, there you would insert the second major function, which is requires that the hearing be conducted as a contested case hearing under the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act before the Office of Administrative Hearings. You shall recommend a decision to the state engineer. The decision of the state engineer shall be subject to judicial review which is under the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act. So what that does, Mr. President, provides an appeal to independent bodies that we can do there. While that doesn't happen in the OAH now, the Office of Administrative Hearings now, Mr. President, the OAH will shortly and quickly, I believe, develop some capacity to understand those issues, just like they have with the other myriad of appeals that go to them through administrative proceedings. So anyway, I appreciate your favorable consideration. Would stand for questions.
Discussion. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, being I'm not a water attorney law, I can't tell you whether this is a good amendment or not.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm not a water attorney either, but, Mr. President, I have some significant reservations about this. The existing system in the water area has kept the appeals within the people that know something about water, and it's a pretty specialized field. I think we do have a bit of a problem in the water area now that when you appeal up the line, you have trouble finding out what the evidence is and trouble bringing in evidence of your own. But this goes well beyond that and brings in a bunch of attorneys who don't know about it. And my experience, Mr. President, is that only attorneys in the state who really specialize in water understand some of the ins and outs. You have a need for a rapid decision, which has not been characterized with our legal system and our appeal process elsewhere. And the need for a rapid decision arises because the time when the water needs to be applied to the crops is right now, and you need to get quick decisions one way or the other. So I have, Mr. President, real reservations about this approach to the process. It does make it sound nice and clean and legal, but I don't think it would work very well in practice, and I think taking the appeal outside the State Engineer Board of Control efforts is fraught with all kinds of consequences. I think a system whereby people could find out the evidence being used and be able to refute it within the existing system would be a much better approach, Mr. President, than this one.
Mr. Majority Foley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I on and against the amendment. The amendment does flip the process on its head in the sense that typically the state engineer provides a recommendation, you appeal that, you have a hearing in front of the Board of Control, and you go move there. This flips that. It also, we have to always be careful that we recognize the distinction between having a hearing officer and a hearing examiner from the Office of Administrative Hearings. So if the Board of Control, for example, wants to have a hearing officer come in and conduct the hearing and apply the rules of evidence, so they can say, look, you attend to the legal stuff, that's one issue. When you bring in the hearing examiner, you're actually asking that hearing examiner to make recommendations on the merits of the findings, and that's the reason why we have the Board of Control, is to make those decisions on the merits, because they frankly are they understand the intricacies of the water law principles for that area. And so we've got, before we inject these two different concepts, one is that the decision is returned to the state engineer, which appears to bypass the Board of Control, we better stop and say, what are we doing here? So it right now you go from the, you get a finding, you go to the Board of Control, then you have, you can enter into the courts afterwards. But the Board of Control is the entity that makes the finding and makes the ruling. They may or may not choose the assistance of the Office of Administrative Hearings for the procedure part, but not for the merits.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Yes. Actually, what happens is the Board of Control is in the appeal stage, that you appeal the decision by the state engineer. The Board of Control doesn't make the decision. They'll either reaffirm it or they'll seek to deny it or with possible modifications. But the problem that you have in this area is that because it goes into the appeal process, you necessarily can't bring in new evidence. And the standard of review is arbitrary and capricious in any appeal process by the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, when you get into going in front of the OAH, it differs slightly because then you go to, you're able to bring in new evidence under the Perkins Amendment, and then you're also you have basically the preponderance of evidence in the OAH to look at what the state agency record is. You're able to bring in new evidence, and the hearing officer is able to make a determination. And frankly, there is the thought that, yes, the Board of Control has more basically specific information and historical context about water law. But, you know, folks, our court system is set up, and I'll give an example in my life where we had a case that went in front of a judge, and it was about something the judge had never seen before, and the judge had to get up to speed and find out about, you know, basically that section of law. And that's essentially what our legal system does. Judges and hearing officers get something in every day that they necessarily don't have a particular expertise on, and they have the capacity to understand that and move forward and make a decision. This brings it into a little bit more of in line with what some other states are doing with an independent process that's outside of the state engineer's office. And so it's essentially you do have a due process. In the current system, there isn't a due process from the standpoint that you can never bring any new evidence because it always starts with the appeal. And so it just makes the system quite a little bit more fair. There's no prohibition about the Office of Administrative Hearings bringing in a member from the Board of Control or someone else with that particular water knowledge. And, in fact, that's probably what they would do, is that they would find somebody that had some area expertise and bring them in. So, Mr. President, I think it's a situation is whether or not you actually want to have due process, or do you want to have just a specter of due process?
Further discussion, Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, just for edification for the body, so you know, one of my concerns with this, and I'm not speaking for or against the amendment, but let me tell you, the process is right now, you have a decision by the state engineer's office that's appealed to the Board of Control. Let me tell you who sits on the Board of Control. The Board of Control is hereby constituted of the State Board of Control, composed of the state engineer and the superintendents of the four water divisions. There, in fact, lays the crux of the problems. The guy, one of the state engineer makes a decision, and then he sits on the very board that it's being appealed to. And I think that gets to the issue of trying to find a better methodology to provide that there's equal balance and justice, that when these decisions are appealed, we always don't want to see the prosecutor be the judge also. And that's, I guess, the issue that we're dealing with here. just for you guys' edification, so you know.
Further discussion? Hearing Senator Nicholas for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess I just been more articulate how to describe it, but folks, if what we want to address those evils, you can do that. You can actually go in and say with respect to the Board of Control that you would remove the state engineer from both the proceedings and deliberations. And we do have instances in other agencies where if the contested case is developed before the advisory council board, whether you've got the advisory board and the state engineer, we can provide a mechanism to supplement the record. And that's pretty common. I mean, the difficulty is that if you're sitting in an appellate capacity and you bring in new evidence that would have influenced the state engineer's decision, you kind of want to send it back to the state engineer and say, well, if you had known about this, would you have made a different decision? If the state engineer is on both the appellate and the first hearing, then you sort of integrate this. But it is always been a process where the state engineer has a great deal of influence from the beginning till the end. And there's been purposes for that over time. It's worked for, I think, 100 years. But you can eliminate the state engineer from deliberations, and you can also provide provisions for the taking additional evidence and then letting them remand it back to the state engineer to reconsider and come back. There's ways to do this without having to throw it to the Office of Administrative Hearings, where you end up with folks that, frankly, are not experts in the area.
Further discussion? Larry Perkins for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't want to mislead the body at all in the fact that I'm not a water lawyer and I wouldn't attempt to practice water law. But what I do know and what you find out is exactly what the good senator from Albany County just told you is, and the good senator from Carbon County just told you is, to me it offends the sense of fairness when you appeal, when the person who makes a decision is basically a very influential and primary figure in the same board that you appeal to, and when you have keep in mind that when there may be better ways to do this process, but this process is this the best process? I don't know. But what I do believe is that from our discussion about this bill is the current system's not fair to the individuals who are trying to protect their own property rights. So if this isn't the right one, it may not be the right one, Mr. President, but the one we have in statute right now doesn't appear to be the right one either.
All those in favor of Senator Perkins' amendment number 2 to Senate File 6, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment has failed. We have another amendment. Amendment number 3, the reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 6, second reading amendment number 3, page 3, line 15.
Senator Meyer.
It doesn't go forward. So you can get the deck stacked against you again. They can hold all the aces, and if you come up with a straight flush of evidence, they can throw the straight flush away. You know, and so basically, Mr. President, I think it's important that we get just these small modifications in there. It'll give a very small modicum of some sense of due process in a system that has none.
Discussion. There's Scott.
Mr. President, and again, I'm not a water lawyer, but I have had some experience in this area with a contested case, not directly in the area of the bills, they said, but dealing with underground water generally, and frankly, the case came out right, but there was a problem with not being able to bring evidence in, not being able to see the evidence, and we do have a potential problem in this area. I think, Mr. President, this amendment is probably headed in the right direction. I do have reservations about the 90-day provision in here, Mr. President. The bill now speaks of 10 days. You do have a problem with needing a rapid decision because the time when the water can be used on the crops passes rapidly, and 90 days will get you past most growing season in Wyoming. So I have a concern with this amendment in that respect, and if it should pass, we'll probably come back on third reading with a different figure. I also do not fully understand and would like some discussion on where in the process this additional evidence is you're having the opportunity to bring it forth. It ought to be, Mr. President, early in the process while it's still in the State Engineer Board of Control system of things and before it gets to court. And I'm not clear whether this does that or not. So I'd like some further discussion, Mr. President, on that particular issue, but I am quite concerned about the time involved.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, my question is on if the decision had already been made and then you're going to allow supplements to the record, how does this fit in? It looked like to me from the decision is made, you either appeal it or accept it. I don't understand a process where you could supplement that decision after it had already been ready and the parties would have no, as I see it, no opportunity to comment on it.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I think the concepts have been articulated. If you think in terms of any person or entity that makes a decision, whether it's a court, the Board of Control, or whether it's the hearing officer or the state engineer, we give them a toolbox to do a variety of things. And one of them is to make a final decision. One is to make the final decision and defer the implementation of the decision. We give them the opportunity to make stays of action so they can take care of the emergencies. But when we get into this issue of how do you supplement the record, we can look at the toolboxes that we've given to other agencies and the courts for this. But if you say you have a blanket 90 days to supplement, that means that your record is really held open for 90 days and there's no finality to appeal from. So are you appealing from the end of the 90-day supplementation, do you have to appeal in a contemporaneous, you move through this 90-day period? Further, typically when we do provide the opportunity to supplement, we require the supplementation to be done by motion. And the purpose for that is so that the other side can see what you're supplying and oftentimes object to it, provide information so that you get a balanced approach. But if you say you have 90 days, then that's just an opportunity for mischief for a party to collect a bunch of information and on the 87th day drop a whole package of stuff that may be not reliable. So remember, when you're in administrative hearings, it's not the rules of evidence that typically apply. It's administrative hearings, and typically it's that information which a reasonably prudent businessman would rely on in his serious business affairs. And so if you're sitting there and saying, look, here's the stuff I want you to look on 3 days before, there's no opportunity for the other side. There's no due process, if you will. So once again, if we want to add to the toolbox of everybody, of the folks to say, look, in those events where you have your hearing, you get a decision and say, you know, really, if I don't understood that's how you're going to make your decision, we have some other valuable information you should have considered. Fair enough, but you have to have a process to provide it, a process for the other side to counter-provide, and then potentially even for modification by the engineer before it goes up. And then you have another issue, and that is once you're before the appellate body, do they have in their toolbox the opportunity to say, as you're arguing it, you said, you know, they ask a question that you never heard of. So, well, if that's the case, we've got some information that would help you make that decision. And typically, in a lot of instances, we've given those appellate courts. Even the Supreme Court has a mechanism on appeal where if they could ask for supplementation of the record. So these are just tools along the way, and they're all designed to make sure that we have good information, good decisions, and fair decisions. As long as we keep that as the rudder as we go through. But the rudder here is thrown off because this is, provides for one opportunity just to throw stuff. And he said now that's into a record that's not tested by the other side.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think those are all good comments and I received them very well, Mr. President, because I know that when I had wrote this, there were some things that would have addressed both the good senator from Natrona County and the good senator from Albany County, some of those concerns. But not being a lawyer, Mr. President, and just having some experience as the good senator from Natrona County in some of these issues, I was looking at trying to solve one of the problems of bringing evidence in, which was if it's only a 30-day window, you don't have time to find an expert, develop questions as far as deposition, develop who you're going to depose, develop all of those different things, and you needed at least some time period that would work. Normally, you have 4 to 6 months to do that in a situation, and I figured you could probably get it done in 90 days. I certainly think that it needs to be in the process as soon as possible. And I also think, Mr. President, that we move forward with this. We need to have some way that the parties could certify that they're not going to supplement the record to speed the thing up even faster. You know, and these are all rules that, you know, I have some knowledge of, but not a complete knowledge as a good senator from Albany County. So, Mr. President, I don't know whether we can get all of this done on third reading and make it a bill that actually has some due process. But I would say, Mr. President, at this point in time, I would divide the amendment and withdraw lines 2 through 5 and lines 10 through 13, and hopefully with a little bit of help with some of the folks that know the process a bit better than I do, and the good senator from Natrona County, we could come up with some way to modify some of this to make it a bit fairer. I would speak in favor, though, of taking at the direction of the board, because essentially that allows the State Board of Control to veto any evidence that they might not like to see or have go forward in the process. And I think, frankly, that really stacks the deck. And so I would speak in favor of that division. And if there's no other questions on that, ask for the question.
Senator Meyer, as I understand, you've withdrawn lines 1 through line 5 and lines 10 through the balance of the amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. President.
So members of the members of the Senate, we're only voting on a particular amendment to page 3, line 17. Any further discussion? All those in favor of that portion of Amendment Number 3 to Senate File 6, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That portion of the amendment's been adopted. Senate File 6, having been read two separate times, the question is whether or not the bill should be read a third time. Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 14, second reading of the Senate File.
Court security funding.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14.
Senate File 14, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 8.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, what this does is this would allow... It splits the effective date for the bill, and what it does is the first part of the amendment, it has an effective date that becomes immediately, and what that would do is allow the SLIB and in particular the Court Security Commission to promulgate the rules under which these awards will be granted so that they can be done, and then the rest of the remainder and the appropriation are all effective July 1st, so that hopefully that there would be once the rules are in, that they could go ahead and proceed, and that's what the amendment does, would ask for your favorable consideration.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's carried. Senate File 14, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 18, second reading of the Senate File.
Counties Legal Publications.
Senate File 18, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 19, second reading of Senate File.
Cities and Towns Legal Publications.
Senate File 19, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 20, second reading of Senate File.
Local Governments Legal Publications.
Senate File 20, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 41, second reading of Senate File.
Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I just wanted to note to the body that for Senate File 41, I provided some of the literature that was provided to the Minerals Committee a couple of years ago, an opinion by the Attorney General related to this matter, and an opinion by our own LSO staff related to this matter for consideration of the body.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, and members of the Senate. As I looked at this and I was making some comments yesterday, it's very dangerous when an engineer tries to practice law. It's almost as dangerous when a lawyer tries to get involved in my business. So when I was speaking about the act of admission, I was referring to what's in this particular agreement. That is Section 7 of the Wyoming Act of Admission. And again, there's some events that have happened within our Supreme Court that affects this, the way this is written. So I just bring that to the body's attention as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Senate File 41, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection. It is so ordered. Senate File 43, second reading of Senate File.
prioritization of municipal solid waste facility projects.
Senate File 43, having been read two separate times, excuse me. It's majority floor there.
Thank you. If I would ask just a couple questions on, with respect to the list, and I applaud the development of the list, but the, as I recall, when we began this process, the idea was that we were identifying these landfills that were principally created by smaller communities who did not have the ability to pass the cost on to a small population base in order to cover their cost. Now I see that on this list, we've added over on page 6, we're adding sort of the end game. By the way, let's put in $9 million for the city of Cheyenne and $9 million for Casper. And the I guess that's where my question is that the that seems to me that it's outside of what we originally intended for this program to cover. These are large communities that, frankly, have the capacity to pass on the cost. While the communities in the states, the larger communities have landfills, they have obligations. And as I remember, this was to identify special folks with large problems, with an inability to resolve, and now we're throwing in the big projects. And this is why we want the list, or the rules of the game. So if we talk about sort of the throw-in, if you will, of some of these larger projects, that larger communities.
Discussion? Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. And the majority floor is exactly correct. It started out to look at that. What we asked the DEQ to do, and I would defer to the Minerals Committee, but is to prioritize all of the problem areas. And the way it's set up is we're going to only go to a certain point based on the appropriation, which is the small communities. And the way I look at this, we have a list, but it's up to this body as we get to those larger communities and their ability to pay themselves how we would react to it. And I'm not sure what the Minerals Committee heard in testimony on this, but I thought we asked them to come up with a list A to Z, prioritize it for us. We would get started on it, but it would only go to the point of the money that we appropriated. We came back later on a couple of years from now in appropriations. We would look at the next list and see what we wanted to do. And that was my understanding of how this was moving forward. I could be incorrect, but that was my understanding, Mr. President.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Briefly, Mr. Vice President's exactly right. We asked for the full list, and then we obviously, as the legislature, have the choice of how far down onto that list we want to go. I have a feeling that the last two items on the list would be pretty shocked if we were to come forward and fund them.
Senate File 43, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 51, second reading of Senate File.
Workers' compensation coverage.
Senate File 51, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 54, second reading of Senate File.
Reports to the legislature.
Senate File 54, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 59, second reading of Senate File.
Specific service signage on highways.
Senate File 59, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 74, second reading of the Senate File.
Unemployment insurance coverage fiduciaries.
Senate File 74, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Yes, we do, Mr. President. I move the following consent list on third reading. Senate File 7, brucellosis surveillance. Senate File 9, probation and parole agent arrest authority. Senate File 10, Work Release Act repeal. Senate File 12, State Education Program. Senate File 13, Hathaway Scholarship Program Enrollment Expansion. Senate File 15, Community College Major Maintenance. Senate File 17, Insurance Electronic Delivery of Documents. Senate File 21, Insurance Own Risk Solvency Model Act. Senate File 26, Endowment Challenge Program, State Funds Inviolate. Senate File 27, Endowment Challenge Program Fees. Senate File 29, Supervised Probation of Misdemeanants. Senate File 55, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program Award Increase. Senate File 79, Education Student Data Security 2.
Would any member of the Senate like any of the bills on the consent list removed? Hearing none. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 7, Senate File 9, Senate File 10, Senate File 12, Senate File 13, Senate File 15, Senate File 17, Senate File 21, Senate File 26, Senate File 27, Senate File 29, Senate File 55, and Senate File 79. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross,
aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 7, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 7, 30 ayes. Senate File 9, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 9, 30 ayes. Senate File 10, are there any changes? Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 10, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 12, are there any changes? Geis, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Nutting, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Hicks, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 12, 22 ayes, 8 noes. Senate File 13, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 13, 30 ayes. Senate File 15, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 15, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 17, are there any changes? Scott, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 17, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 21, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 21, 30 ayes. Senate File 26, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 26, 30 ayes. Senate File 27, are there any changes? Landon, aye to no. Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Anderson District 2, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 27, 25 ayes, 5 noes. Senate File 29, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 29, 30 ayes. Senate File 55, are there any changes?
Meyer, aye to no.
Meyer, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 55, 24 ayes, 6 noes. Senate File 79, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 79, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 7, brucellosis surveillance, Senate File 9, probation and parole agent arrest authority, Senate File 10, work release act repeal, Senate File 12, state education program, Senate File 13, Hathaway scholarship program, enrollment expansion, Senate File 15, community college major maintenance, Senate File 17, insurance, electronic delivery of documents, Senate File 21, insurance, own risk solvency model act, Senate File 26, endowment challenge program, state funds inviolate, Senate File 27, endowment challenge program, fees, Senate File 29, supervised probation of misdemeanors, Senate File 55, Hathaway student scholarship program, award increase, and Senate File 79, education, student data security 2, have passed the Senate. Mr. Majority, Senator Case.
The re-referral of Senate File 53, Unfair Trade Practices, to Committee Number 10.
Without objection, Senate File 53 will be re-referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I want to pick up two bills before we go to lunch, so I'd move the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Senator Hastert, consideration of bills on general file.
Committee Hall, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 48, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 48, sponsored by the Travel Committee, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership, an act relating to the Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund Board. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Meyer, and Perkins. Excuse, Senator Hastert, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
If
heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Trust Fund Board membership. This bill was re-referred to Appropriations, and I would ask that you call on the Chairman of Appropriations for their action, and then come back to me, please.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The action was we went along with what you wanted to do, and we left it that way. Now, we can change it on a second reading amendment if you'd like, Mike. Senator
Burns.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I saw the Vice President up at the mic, and I didn't want him to have wasted an entire action of getting up. Mr. Chairman, for further explanation of this fine bill, I ask that you call on the fair senator from the southwest part of the state.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. This feels a little like deja vu, but here I am once again to talk about the Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund Board. The idea behind this is the Cultural Trust Fund Board, as I mentioned earlier, provides funding for cultural and historic projects in all 23 counties of the state. But what has happened is they have had a five-member board, one of which is the administrator of the Cultural Resources Cultural Trust. So anyway, what happens is she, because she works on so many of these projects, can't vote on her own projects. So she has to recuse herself from a great number of projects, meaning that four people are making decisions that impact the entire state and impact a great deal of money. So what we would like to do is have the administrator of the Division of Cultural Resources remain on the board, but as an ex officio member without a vote, because she rarely votes anyway. So ex officio without a vote, but then add one more voting board member. So now we'll have five voting board members who are able to vote all the time. So it's really a minor kind of change in terms of this very, very important board. If you'll notice, it has an effective date a little later. It's March 1st of 2015. And, of course, that's after our next session, simply because should this bill be successful and the Cultural Trust Fund Board be allowed to appoint an additional member, that member would, of course, require Senate approval. So we would not be able to put that in place until March of 2015. That's the bill in a nutshell. I would stand for any questions and would ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none. You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on file 48, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate 48 has passed committee of the whole. Senator Rothfuss.
All right, the next file for our consideration is Senate File 63. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 63, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Sexual Assault Protection Orders, an act relating to public health and safety. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christian, Kraft, and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 63, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. There are no standing committee amendments, and for a further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from Sweetwater County.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, as you recall in the introduction, I bring to you Senate File 63. Currently in Wyoming, if you're a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault by a household member, you can get a family violence protection order. And if you are stalked and can show a course of conduct, you could apply for a stalking protection order. However, if you are sexually assaulted in Wyoming and want to get a protection order against the person that assaulted you, there isn't a process to do that. Mr. Chairman, that's what brings in Senate File 63. You were just passed out a fact sheet on it, two-sided, so you make sure you know that. I want to point out the first part of the thing in the bill, that most of this bill, virtually all of this bill, already exists in statutes in Title 35 for the sexual for the domestic violence protection orders. The language is identical in virtually all parts of this bill. A few modifications for the to accommodate the sexual assault portion of it, Mr. Chairman. But we did bring in the statutes on those other ones. So with that, Mr. Chairman, just to walk through the bill, page 1, lines 12 through 13, this act will be part of Section 35, which is where in Wyoming we have the Family Violence Protection Order Act. And since they are both civil processes, not criminal, this is the logical place to put them. Page 2, lines 12 through 15 is the definition. This act only applies to sexual assault crimes as defined in 62301. Lines 19 through 21 is non-physical contact, which needs to be defined so that we can include it in the restraining order. Judge would order that a respondent have no physical or non-physical contact with the petitioner. Page 3, lines 1 through 3 is the petitioner. Then on to the act applies to the listed sexual assault statutes, also applies to sexual abuse of a minor, which is 62314. And, Mr. Chairman, lines 10 through 13 defines a sexual assault protection order. Lines 21 and 23 is where we begin to walk through the process of filing a petition. Begins with the victim of sexual assault filing a petition with the county clerk. And then on page 4, line 1 through 8, petition must be made under oath and be accompanied by a sworn affidavit. The victim has to set out specific facts that show the assault and stating specific statements or actions made before, during, or after of the sexual assault, which give rise to a reasonable fear of future dangerous acts. The victim, and that's a high bar, members of the Senate, victim has to give specific as to why she wants this person to stay away, and she has to establish that he or she did something that gives rise for reasonable fear. Lines 10 through 12 is no filing fee, and lines 14 through 24 clarifies that petition forms are to be generated by the Division of Victim Services. Page 5, lines 5 through 15, a court cannot deny the filing of a petition or granting an order, even if there's criminal or civil order entered in a case against the respondent. Lines 17 through 24 address confidentiality provisions. Page 6, lines 2 through 19, an ex parte, temporary, or final order can be extended. And lines 23, 24 start where who can file the petition. On page 7, lines 2 through 4 explains persons who may file a petition for protection are the person who does not qualify for a domestic violence protection order and who is a victim of sexual assault. Under the domestic violence protection order, Mr. Chairman, if you are assaulted by a household member as defined in the statute, you can apply for a domestic violence protection order. But the problem is that if you know the perpetrator but he doesn't fit into that definition of a household member, you can't apply. It's also important that the victim can apply for this after one incident. Under the stalking statutes, in order to get a stalking protection order, the victim has to show a course of conduct, which is usually at least 3 incidences. And then on behalf of a minor child, a vulnerable adult, or any other adult who can't file themselves. Being able to file for a minor child is really important because statistically, most child sexual assaults are committed by someone the victim knows, so there is a lot of child victims who currently can't get a protection order but could under this statute, Mr. Chairman. Page 8, lines 1 through 16, once the petition is filed, the court shall set a hearing, which will be held within 14 days of filing. Personal service has to be made on the respondent within 7 days prior to the hearing, and then if service can't be made, then the court shall set a new hearing and make additional attempts to attain service on the respondent. Lines 18 through 24 just clarify that a sexual assault advocate, as defined in 112.116, be allowed to accompany the victim. Page 9 is the burden of proof. Lines 8 through 16, the victim has a burden of proof to prove to the judge that she was sexually assaulted by the respondent, and she must prove by a preponderance of the evidence, which is more likely than not that it happened the way presented. If the court agrees, it will issue a sexual assault protection order. That the petitioner can't be denied an order because one of the parties is a minor. And at page 10, lines 5 through 24, specify that the court may include in the order for protection. The court has broad discretion to order what it wants in effort to protect the victim. Lines 2 through 21 of page 11 outline that the court should do what the court should do if both parties are under 18 and in the same school. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, and you know, the judges already have to deal with this in stalking and other issues, and they're pretty well versed in how to separate students and allow for education. Bottom of page 11 and page 12, the court can't base a denial of a protection order on page 12 if there was a lapse of time. Was voluntarily intoxicated. The petitioner was voluntarily intoxicated. And then the petitioner engaged in limited consensual touching. And lines 15 through 20 can't get monetary damage, but the court can order the respondent to pay costs or fees. Lines 22 and 23, willful violation of a protection order is a crime defined in 64404 as a misdemeanor. And on page 13, lines 5 through 19, the sections outline the ex parte temporary order. Lines 21 through 24, an ex parte is only valid for no more than 14 days, and a full hearing is to be set no later than 14 days from the issuance of the temporary order. Page 14, lines 1 through 5, continue on that the respondent shall be personally served with an ex parte order along with the petition and notice of hearing date. Lines 7 through 15, the temporary order has to contain the date and time of issuance, expiration date, and the other items listed, and then lines 17 through 23 outline what must be included in a protection order, the name of the petitioner, date and time the protection order was issued, date, time, and place for any scheduled hearing, for extension, each remedy in an ex parte order, and the reason for entering that remedy without prior notice to the respondent, and then identify each law enforcement agency with which the sexual assault protection order be delivered. If it's an ex parte order, that the respondent may petition the court to reopen the order. Page 16, lines 7 through 13, the notice that must be printed on the order and then onto the process for the court to initiate the sexual assault protection order sets out when that can happen. Page 17, lines 13 through 16, a written order containing the court directives. Page 17 again outlines exactly the language that must be included. And page 18, lines 2 through 8, when a defendant is found guilty of sexual assault and a conditioning of the sentence restricts the defendant's ability to contact the victim. And then lines 10 through 20, upon application, the court may modify the terms of an existing sexual assault protection order. And then on page 19, lines 1 through 4, an ex parte order shall not be admissible as evidence in any subsequent civil action for damages arising from conduct alleged in the petition to the or order, which I think is an important part, and then mine's 8 through 24 in proceedings for the sexual assault protection order or for prosecuting a sexual assault protection order. The prior sexual activity of the petitioner is not admissible except as evidence of sexual conduct between the petitioner and respondent or when constitutionally required to be admitted. Lines 22 through 24 outline that the court has to do what the court has to do to admit the evidence. And then page 21 amends the Wyoming statute 64404, which is the criminal violation statute, this to add the new protection orders. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, that's kind of the quick on the bill. But please remember that most of this language is already existing in statutes, and we're bringing it over. This is only for a protection order, simply to give the victim time to heal and the ability to heal. It brings in nothing else. It doesn't bring in criminal charges or anything else like that. It's simply allowing for a protection order, as we do in stalking or as we do in family violence. Please ask for your favorable consideration, and we'll try and stand for questions.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I am concerned that this is a bill that really goes in and talks about a lot of very sensitive areas that has not had the test of an interim study. And I think part of the questions I asked, my concern was, where did the template come? How did it come to us this way? How did we pick and choose which provisions came in? But, for example, on page 8, we have sexual assault advocates. So we have folks that are provided a special benefit to consult with these with victims. And then over on page 9, lines 4 through 6, we say that their communications are protected. And we give them a privilege, which is fairly unique, so that, remember, you got to look on the other side, too. If there's a charge that's not borne out and you've got an advocate that is conferring with this witness before the witness testifies, before the victim testifies, you've got this privilege attached, so you can't even know what's happening. You turn over to page 10, and now, we're talking about non-relatives, and I think about folks that may have a dispute in their workplace. We say the court can come in and prohibit the respondent from the workplace. So if you've got a job and you may have a charge you don't think is appropriate, you can be kicked out of work. So we're talking about some significant civil rights here that are being denied on something that's pretty rudimentary in terms of proof. Over on the bottom of page 11, we say that the court denial of relief may not be based in whole or part on evidence that there has been a lapse of time between a sexual assault and the filing of the petition. So two co-workers get in a spat, and they said, well, 5 years ago something happened, and the co-worker comes in and brings the action. Why shouldn't this be available for consideration? The respondent was voluntarily intoxicated. Two co-workers go out drinking, and something happens, and then 4 months later they bring this up and they want their co-worker kicked out of the workplace. The petitioner was voluntarily intoxicated under the influence of controlled substance. The petitioner engaged in limited consensual touching, so that when we import these concepts, it might be appropriate for familial type relationships or other special relationships where you say, certainly that's wrong, and bring it into the environment where you have coworkers, people that are in their normal lives, and provide for these accelerated special procedures with lower proofs. Shouldn't we put this through the test of time, at least the test of an intermittent study, to figure out whether these concepts are appropriate to these potential harms?
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Other discussion, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some serious questions about this bill. It seems to me that if if there's a sexual assault? First of all, these are very sensitive things, and I'm not making light of any of that. If the, most of the time, more often than not, you have the difficulty of the person that was the victim even coming forward. But if they've made that step, they want to come forward, they want to get a sexual assault protection order, they most likely have already reported to the police. They most likely have already in the criminal system. All of these things are addressed in the criminal court in terms of bond conditions. Those are all things that the court would order if somebody had been alleged to have sexually assaulted somebody. You would routinely find those things in all the bond conditions or for release. The next thing that I have question about is, when we're talking about sexual assault, has anybody explored or figured out what does this do to the alleged perpetrator? Does that person have to go on the sex offender registry list? That's not even clear here. But you have an order of protection for sexual assault. Does that affect those things? And, of course, the burden of proof. Now, I understand that most of this has been extracted from the Family Violence Protection Order Act, and I am very familiar with that. I do hundreds of those cases. But this is a different beast. I mean, it is a different animal completely. And I tend to subscribe with the majority floor leader that this really needs to be vetted through an interim committee to address some of these issues. What is the effect of the order? While it says that there's no damages that can be awarded in this hearing, what is the effect of the order as evidence in, say, a civil lawsuit for civil damages? My experience most of the time in family violence protection order cases is the allegations are brought. It's generally held in circuit court, and those hearings are fairly rapid, and there are certain repercussions for those orders. You're going to have to seriously consider whether or not this is ready for prime time at this point in time without vetting a number of these issues, because believe me, these are serious kinds of allegations when you're just talking about sexual assault. I do not mean to imply that these are not and that we need to take it seriously, but we need to take a hard look at just willy-nilly running out and getting protection orders without some further vetting.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I voted for this bill in committee, but I had some concerns, and I expressed those concerns, and I'd like to re-express them. Along the lines of the President and the Majority Floor Leader, if you look over to the top of page 13, that's where you get into the Ex Parte Temporary Sexual Assault Protection Order. By ex parte, that means that the alleged victim can go to the judge and get a protection order without the presumed assailant ever knowing anything about it. He may have had what he thought was consensual sex, felt good about it or whatever, and a couple of days later be served with a protection order, not knowing that this had ever been done. That's one of the additional concerns I have, and this goes to the President's point. And I ask this question specifically. There does not have to be a criminal charge filed for this protection order to come down. And that's one of the things that scared me, and that in my fear is that this could be used and abused by somebody without having to go through the whole criminal system and all that. They could just go to a judge, lay out a story, and get a protection order that's good for 2 weeks, or the hearing has to be within 2 weeks. About the protection order itself without ever having filed criminal charges. And that's one of the things that scared me. One of the other things that bothered me is over on page 16, middle of 16, line 7, starting at line 7 and the bottom of 17, that's the language of the protection order that the presumed assailant gets and tells him that you have been issued an order, you are not to go near this person. And it says you can be arrested even if this person who's protected invites you to their house. And invites you to go, don't mind that, just I was mad at the time, just come on to my house. And it says, doesn't matter if they invite you or not. You are violating the law if you go to their house. And that sort of thing scares me. As a matter of fact, I know I grew up with an idiot who had an ex-wife who was pulling that stunt on him and got him arrested two or three times by inviting him back to her house, even though there was a protection order.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman.
Order.
Mr. Chairman, I want to
where's my gavel?
Ask a question in another realm.
Find it.
You know, we've heard some discussion of some of the possible harms of these things and potential abuses of them. My question is, are we going to do any good with these? Or is this just something to make us feel good without achieving anything? With the other protection orders we've got, with the stalking ones, there's a particular set of conduct that is scary and potentially dangerous that if somebody violates it, you can get something done about it, you can get a stop put to it. With a domestic case, you're putting a stop to a lot of the incidental contact that would normally happen in a domestic circumstance that could lead to trouble. I can see where those are going to do some good. But I know from reading the public press, if nothing else, that a real perpetrator will just ignore a domestic protection order and go ahead and do evil sometimes. And I'm wondering on this one, Mr. Chairman, if we have these things, will it give us the illusion of protection without really providing any protection? And that's my concern. I'd like to hear some evidence, and maybe an interim committee is the best way to gather that sort of thing, that we are, in fact, doing something real here, and it's not just a feel-good measure that has some potential for abuse, but that we're really going to achieve some additional protection for the people who are potential victims here.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I expressed my concerns I had with the bill, but I did start out by saying I voted for it. And the reason I voted for it is just in answer to the tall senator's question. It looked to me like it could do, and I think probably would do, some good out there. We had a number of advocates who got up and spoke about specific instances where they could have used or needed a protection order like this, where the accusation was made, and the accused was really putting pressure on, and in some cases intimidating the victim to try and get her to drop the case, and there was absolutely nothing that she could do about it.
Thank you, Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address a little bit about the benefits also, kind of piggybacking on what the good chairman just said. We did have a lot of testimony from a number of witnesses, but I'd kind of like to speak about my own experience from years and years and years working in the school system as a guidance counselor and then working in private practice. And what we found, the reason we brought this legislation forward, and I might add that we actually did ask for an interim study about this, and we're told it was not necessary. So that's why it's not an interim study and it's a bill. But this particular piece of legislation seeks to fill that gap. We've got the gap. If you're a stalker, you can get a protection order. If you're a victim of domestic violence, that your victim can get a protection order. They can't for sexual assault. And this is where I would see a great deal of this with minors, with young children, not young children, but with junior high, high school, and college age people who did not report. I would remind you that this is civil. It's not a criminal charge. It's a civil protection. I will also tell you that over my years, I had any number of students come in who just wanted to be left alone. They just wanted Johnny or Bobby or whoever. They didn't want him in their house. In fact, what they wanted out of algebra with him. That's what they wanted, and we couldn't do that. In the schools, we couldn't just willy-nilly make a change. If we had that direction to say, sure, we can move you into a different class, or sure, we can move your locker, that would have been very helpful. It would have been very helpful for us in working with a number of these, particularly teenaged women who are victimized and very vulnerable. I also want to talk about, because I talked to a good friend of mine who's a circuit court judge about this, in terms of getting this order and in terms of, because your points are all very well taken. These are serious charges, and we don't want somebody to get mad at their boyfriend or mom to find out that that daughter's with the boyfriend she doesn't like, and all of a sudden this is happening. We don't want that. So I asked about that, and his response was that it's in there pretty clearly about course of conduct, that this has to be granted by a judge. Somebody doesn't just say, I hate Johnny, and I want him to leave me alone, and they get a protection order. There has to be a preponderance of evidence. And what I was told is usually the judge asks for three different contacts, three demonstrated situations where I've been bothered by Johnny and he won't leave me alone. So not being an attorney, but having spent many years of my life working with victims, I will tell you this is a gap in the system, and I would urge your support to help fill that gap. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kraft. For the discussion, Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, I did ask for an interim study. I said I'm management counsel, and I went to management counsel. And it was felt by the Judiciary Committee told me, the members there said, I don't know why you need an interim study. It's pretty straightforward. It's a good bill. There was only concerns last year over the amendments that the county commissioners put in. You know, we can, and I know that's a, you know, great way to, it, you know, it's the, some of the issues like the issue of the advocate, that's taken out of the statutes. That's in existing statutes today. Virtually all of this information you already have in the statutes. Is the judge going to, and it's not a he said, she said. There's measures, there's bars, higher bars to hear that you have to meet than you have to do in other protection orders. And to the tall senator from Casper, that my good colleague from Sweetwater County is correct in the fact that advocates did come in and said repeatedly over and over again, from all over the state, how much good this bill could do if they had the language in the statutes. To have to go on a registry? No. No. This is just strictly, there's nothing else involved in here. It's just simply says we can get a protection order to have the individual stay away from the victim. Give her him, her time to heal. Nothing goes on a registry. Nothing goes any further than a protection order. Even states it can't be used in a civil crime. But remember, preponderance of the evidence, high bar. We did ask for an interim study. It was said it wasn't necessary. We put many safeguards in this bill. I feel that it's a good thing for victims, and it's not something that's going to go bump in the night.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Mr. President.
Thank you. Just one point, and I don't mean to get in an argument here, but quite frankly, I disagree wholeheartedly with the good senator, who's the minority caucus leader. The burden of proof is preponderance of evidence. That is the lowest burden of proof in our court systems, period. It's not a higher burden of proof. When we're talking about sexual assault, of course, then you've got the criminal component. That would be beyond a reasonable doubt. So take that into consideration when you're considering this.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, last point, and I don't want to get into the argument. I certainly can't argue with all the attorneys, but preponderance of evidence is the research I did. That's the bar that grand juries use.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 63, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. I heard division called for that matter. Will all those in favor please rise? Those opposed, please rise. Senate File 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole permit me to rise and sit again at 2 p.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Sounds good. Mr. President. 63 is right there.
Good job. What do we have? Anything? We've got committee stuff to do. You've heard the motion. That, stand in recess until 2 p.m. Are there any announcements? Senator Hines.
Number 9 mineral will meet in approximately 15 minutes to take up Senate File 75, Environmental Protection Agency Action 2, and Senate Joint Resolution 1, Regulation of Carbon Dioxide Emissions.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules, will meet in 15 minutes in room S5 to consider the following Senate files. Senate File 67, Administrative Rule Streamlining, Senate File 68, Obsolete Laws, and Senate File 11, Appropriation for the Legislature.
Any further announcements? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senate stands in recess until 2 p.m.